This is FM 90.1 KCFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you are listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, economic, social, and technological. I'm Susan Schutte.
And I'm Stephen Schutte. Tonight we're going to focus the program on the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, which takes place in Nevada City this weekend, January 9th through 11th. So our opening music was Let's Go to the Movies from the musical Annie. Tonight we'll be talking with the festival director and founder, Kathy Dotson, and then with two of the filmmakers who will be in the festival. First, we'll talk with David Brown, creator of a film about dumpster diving called I Love Trash. And then we'll talk with Annabella Funk, a third-grade student who has made a film, History of the Yuba River.
This year, years will be the 7th annual festival, and the sponsors state, the Wild and Scenic Film Festival is a call to action. Filmgoers are transformed into a congregation of committed activists dedicated to saving our increasingly threatened planet. We show environmental and adventure films that illustrate the Earth's beauty, the challenges facing our planet, and the work communities are doing to protect the environment. Through these films, Wild and Scenic both informs people about the state of the world and inspires them to take action. Our purpose in this edition of Ecotopia is partly to promote the festival, which is an excellent event within our listening area, but also to look at the ecotopian issues that filmmakers undertake and how film functions as a medium for spreading the word about important environmental issues and problems.
Ecotopia is underwritten by... I've got it here somewhere. Listener contributions, and by Greenovations, based in Chico. Greenovations specializes in energy-focused retrofitting and green building upgrades. They offer in-home energy audits, diagnostic testing, and environmentally friendly products for home improvements. Greenovations can be reached by calling 895-9700 and on the web at green-o-vations.com. And we're also brought to you by Serenity Homes, specializing in Fuqua manufactured homes built using sustainable building practices with over 70 floor plans to choose from. The Serenity Homes in-house construction staff will assist you with all of your on-site development needs, from permits to the final inspection. For more information, you can visit them on the web at www.serenityhomes.com. or at their showroom located on 2490 Bruce Road. Serenity Homes can be reached by calling 566-9480. We'll be right back with Katsy Dotson, the Wild and Scenic Film Festival director, right after this.
We'll be right back.
That was Let's Make a Movie by Ratcliffe Bailey from Deuce. You're listening to Ecotopia on KZFR, and tonight we are focusing on the Wild and Scenic Film Festival to be held this coming weekend in Nevada City.
On the phone we have Kathy Dotson, who's the director and founder of the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. Welcome, Kathy.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for having me on tonight.
Could we start perhaps with some details of the festival? It runs Friday through Sunday in Nevada City. Tell us what you have cooked up, please.
Well, gosh, it grows by the minute, actually. But basically, it's this coming Friday through Sunday, and we have about 125 films, plus we have speakers, we have free workshops, we have wine tastings, parties. The list goes on and on. Pretty much every minute is filled during the weekend.
Excellent. How many people do you expect to participate altogether?
Our audience will probably be about 5,000 here in our little town of Nevada City, mm-hmm. which makes it a fairly significant event for our community.
Right. You're not sold out yet at this point, I take it?
We aren't. Ticket sales are going really well, and we do expect to be just about at capacity this weekend.
Excellent.
And it's exciting. People come from all over the West Coast, not to mention the whole United States, to come to the festival.
We'll mention your website, which we will also post on our ecotopiakzfr.net site. Yours is www.wildandscenicfilmfestival.org.
You got it. And we just loaded on the homepage about 84 of the 125 films that we're going to be showing trailers for mm-hmm. those films so that people have the opportunity to check some of them out.
What do the workshops consist of?
Well, they're all day on Saturday. We have two different venues. They go from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m., and they feature a lot of the speakers and filmmakers talking about the issues that are presented in the films, as well as talking about filmmaking, environmental filmmaking, and adventure filmmaking in general. We have things like how to go solar in your home as
nice.
Well. We have, we have a great panel that we did last year as well, which was one of our most popular, which includes our youngest filmmakers for the weekend, and they talk about how they got involved in environmental filmmaking.
So are there quite a few films by young filmmakers?
It always surprises me. And, and each year it tends to grow. And, when we say young filmmakers, we have a local filmmaker, who made a film when she was 8. She's now 9 and is currently working on her next feature.
Yeah, we'll be talking to her later on the show. So
oh,
that's
right,
great.
That's Annabella.
Right.
And then, most of our young filmmakers are in college.
Okay.
And they're studying to be professional filmmakers.
And how do you select the films that appear in the festival? Do you have a panel of judges or...
We do.
How do you see all of those films?
It's pretty amazing. My husband will attest that I do watch every single one
wow.
that comes in. We get about 300 or so submissions every year. And I do have a program committee that I work with. It's about 10 people. And we start watching films usually in June or July. And but they just can't possibly get through every film, so I do watch every single one, but they help me then shape the program and decide on the final 125, as in this case for this year. And then we have a separate jury, an awards jury of prestigious filmmakers and industry professionals who then decide on the awards.
What inspired you to found the festival in the first place? And has it grown beyond your expectations, or did you have hopes for something like this when you started it?
Yeah, well, absolutely not. That was back in, 2002 is kind of when we conceived it. And if somebody told me back then that I would be an environmental film festival director, I would have said, what? What are you talking about? I work for the South Yuba River Citizens League, mm-hmm. and we're a watershed advocacy organization here in Nevada City, and we're 26 years old, and we started back in the 80s to basically stop dams on the South Yuba River. And what we got to be really good at, not only did we achieve wild and scenic status on the South Yuba River, we also got really good at throwing community events and really good at parties. We were famous for our beer parties. And but really, it helped to bring the community together around our issues. And we had put on so many different dances and different kinds of events. It occurred to us one day that Nevada City really needed a film festival, and we had no idea how to do it, what to do. So we just started at the beginning. I had never even been to a film festival at that point. So I went to a couple and talked to a few people and put it together. And that first year in 2003, we had, I believe, 20, 21 films. We had 500 people show up. And we were so scared that any of the filmmakers came that we didn't want to even invite them. We didn't know how it was going to turn out. Yeah. And that was, you know, that was seven years ago, or seven festivals ago, and now we're the largest environmental film festival in the United States. And the increase in the number of films and the prestige that we have around the film festival now definitely has surprised us.
So I'm curious, after where else can these films be seen? Of course, we want everyone to come to the film festival, but how do people see these other than going to a film festival?
Well, that's a really good question. What we like to say about the films that we show is that these are not films that you can normally see.
Right.
You can't get them on Netflix. You can't find them at your local rental store. I mean, there are some, and after the success of An Inconvenient Truth, you're seeing more and more environmental films make it to the mainstream, which is really exciting. But, you know, for the most part, these are independent films, and it's difficult to find them. We do have we have the majority of the films available in a rental library here in Nevada City, but it's for locals only.
I see.
A lot of the filmmakers do sell their films through their websites, and we sell a lot of the films at the event itself. But yeah, it's hard. We do what we started in 2004 after being in being in business for a couple of years, is we started a tour program.
Oh, good.
And so a lot of the films are now reaching communities across the United States. In fact, this past year, we've reached about 90 communities across the United States.
And it seems that would be good. I'm just kind of blue skying it here. It seems that it would be good to make films like this available for schools and, you know, for communities that have particular issues that they would like to tackle and need to be informed or inspired or whatever.
Absolutely, and that's somewhat how the tour has shaped up to be. We actually promote it to environmental organizations across the nation, and they use it as a tool to get their messages out as well as a fundraising tool. But we're also looking into starting an on-campus program for high schools and college campuses.
Oh, good.
Could you talk a little bit about the effectiveness of film generally as a persuasive medium? What do you see as the advantages in promoting environmental causes as compared, say, to essay or book or protest, demonstration, and so forth?
Well, what's great about film is, you know, everybody loves going to the movies. And I think that's why our film festival has really taken off like it has, is, you know, it's entertaining, but at the same time with the environmental film is that you're telling stories that are also very inspirational and educational. And so you have this combination of this incredible, powerful medium like film, plus these amazing stories of people all around the world doing these incredible things for the planet, and it inspires people. I mean, one of my favorite parts about the film festival is seeing people walk out of the theaters crying or mad or, you know, extremely happy, just so filled with emotion, because that's what the power of film can do to somebody. And I, You know, I always say, gosh, after watching 300 environmental films every year, if I haven't made a difference in my life, who is going to?
Yeah,
really. And I, you know, I do my best here in my household, but I know that you know, these films, for example, we have this one called The Price of Sugar, that's all about the sugar industry in the world. And it has forced me to really look at my shopping habits.
Right.
And sugar, for instance, is definitely one that I now take into consideration when I go to the store.
Wow, yeah. Mm.
Thank you very much, Kathy. We've been talking with Kathy Dotson, who is director and founder of the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. It's being held this weekend in Nevada City. You can go online to www.wildandscenicfilmfestival.org for more information. We very much appreciate your being with us, Kathy.
And have a great weekend. It sounds really wonderful.
Thanks, you guys. And I just want to put out a thank you to KZFR. They've always been so supportive of a lot of events that we've put on here in Nevada City. So thank you to you guys, and thanks to the community over there.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We'll be back with one of the filmmakers featured in the festival, David Brown, right after this.
Interlude music was Fresh Garbage by Spirit from their album of the same name. We are now talking with David Brown, who has created a film called I Love Trash that will be shown at the Wild and Scenic Film Festival this Saturday. Welcome, David.
Hi.
Hello. It's nice to have you on the show. Could you tell us a little bit about your film?
Yes. My film, I Love Trash, it's a documentary. And it was documenting me and the other filmmaker, where we moved to a new city, and we didn't buy any things for 3 months.
Wow.
And instead did an experiment in trash, and we dumpster dove for everything that we would otherwise buy.
So what motivated you to do that? What inspired you?
Well, two things, I guess. One was just sort of noticing all the wastefulness around mm-hmm. in this country and noticing how much stuff is being thrown away that's perfectly usable.
Right, right.
Could you tell us about some of the stuff you found?
Oh, well, we found really everything under the sun. We found computers. We found all our food. We moved to Berkeley, California, and we got an unfurnished apartment, and we brought only the clothes we were wearing and a flashlight and video equipment to document this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So we found all our furniture, our beds, our sofas, our tables.
So what are some good sources for dumpster diving? What did you find as sort of promising places to go for each of the things that you had to, do furniture? Was this furniture that, actually usable furniture, not stuff that was, like, falling apart? Or what sort of condition was it in?
In starting this project, I thought, you know, we might have to make do with some broken stuff and have to fix it up, but we actually didn't even have to do that. Everything we found worked perfect. Everything that we used worked perfectly fine. It was always really surprising. You know, why would someone throw out a totally working computer?
Right.
It wasn't the most brand new computer out there, but it worked.
So did you find things, electronic things too, like toasters and things that you could cook with, irons? I guess you probably weren't too worried about an iron, but like, what other kinds of unusual things did you find that you used?
Really just a lot of regular household items that, you know, don't possibly go stale, you know, mm-hmm. a wok or a pot and a pan. They don't have a shelf life, but people still throw them away when they want a new, shinier one, I guess.
So when you talk about what your film reveals about society or what the experience revealed, it's partly that we are indeed a throwaway society. We've got a lot of perfectly useful stuff that we're replacing for one reason or another.
Yeah. I think the society that we've built and really encourages to throw things away, because to keep the economy running, we have to be buying new stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this perceived obsolescence that this thing isn't usable anymore because it's, oh, that's the thing from last season.
Right.
You know, those, you know, like clothes. We found so many clothes all the time. And that's a very good example of something where a shirt doesn't stop working, but if it's not in style, people will throw it away.
I'm guessing that you probably didn't find a video camera in the trash, but I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you made the film. What equipment, and I am assuming that yours was a low-budget production. How did you go about this? What did you use, and how did you operate?
It was record. The video camera we did buy.
Right.
So we bought the video camera and videotapes, and we sort of alternated who was filming all the time. We also interviewed a lot of other dumpster divers. Other people, for whatever reason, dumpster dive because of socially conscious reasons, artists, some people just because it was cheap and free way to live. And, you know, people of all sorts, doctors,
no
homeless
kidding.
People, all across the board.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of food did you find? I'm sorry, I'm back. I'm still interested in the dumpster stuff. Where did you find your food, and what kind of food did you eat?
We primarily got our food from grocery stores, and we're living in Berkeley, so we happen to be around a lot of very nice, kind of upscale grocery stores. So I would say most of our food, I don't really know the percent, but most of our food was organic.
That's you chose a good place to dumpster dive.
A good place?
Uh-huh.
Well, really, I found just about any grocery store throws mm-hmm. away more food than one person, one family can possibly eat. Mm-hmm. And I've dumpstered all over the country and pretty much haven't found anywhere that doesn't have lots of food just sitting there,
so,
ready to be buried in the ground.
So were you a filmmaker? Have you made other films? And this is a new topic for you? Or how did you come into making film? What's your background as a filmmaker?
Well, this is actually the first film that I've made.
Nice.
I was a dumpster diver beforehand and an artist, and I experimented with other mediums using dumpstered materials.
Right.
And in the film, you know, I dumpstered a lot of paint and made some paintings. We made some sculptures, things like that. But we really wanted to make a film because it's another medium, and I think is a good way of communicating to an audience a very specific idea, maybe more so than a painting.
Mm-hmm. And did you have any particular problems when you were making the film? I mean, were there things that you learned as you went along about either dumpster diving or filming?
Actually, one of the, I guess you could say it was a problem. One of our problems was we noticed this is so easy. You know, we thought we were going to go into this and we're going to document some of our difficulties, and we just hardly ran into any difficulties. We thought, you know, maybe we'll show us having to really scrounge for something or having to really be real creative to figure out how to, I don't know, reinvent something into something else. But we found so many goods that were just perfect, in perfect condition as is, that we didn't really have to do that. So it allowed us to just make art on our own.
Are there any, like, legal issues involved in dumpster diving, or does anybody try to prevent you from doing dumpster diving?
Well, laws are generally that you are not allowed to dump things into a dumpster.
Okay.
But sometimes a store manager might come out and say, hey, I don't want you in there. You know, if you took something, you could get sick. And if that's how they want to feel, I generally just say, okay, that's fine. You know, there are hundreds of other dumpsters all around. I don't need to argue. But occasionally, I would say, well, you know, I'm actually making a film about dumpster diving, and then mm-hmm. I'd get to talking to the manager, and that was always a very pleasant change of situation, where they started off being sort of a little hostile and, hey, I don't want you doing that, and then, oh, well, I guess if there's some other thought behind this, maybe
mm-hmm. no harm. Yeah.
So what were some of your more interesting experiences in the 3 months that you were making the film and living in Berkeley?
Well, some of the things that I liked a lot were in searching for stuff and finding huge amounts of something, it was always very inspiring to see what item would inspire some sort of action. All our basic needs were very easily taken care of in, you know, a couple hours a week.
Oh, okay.
So we had a lot of time where we could say, oh, we'll just go and look around for stuff, and maybe we find a lot of some weird object, and we'll go make a sculpture out of it. Or quite a few times we would just find a lot of some kind of, you know, nice packaged food and say, well, we can't eat 400 boxes of sushi, so we'll take it down to People's Park and we'll give it away to everyone.
Nice.
People are very pleased to be handed a lot of fresh sushi or, you know, whatever other food it was.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Apples, fruits, vegetables, things like that.
Now, have you screened this film anyplace else, or is the festival your debut?
It's been in the Bend Film Festival.
Oh, nice.
In Oregon.
Uh-huh.
And I've had two screenings of it in Oberlin, Ohio, which is where I did the editing and where I'm living right now as well.
Okay. Okay. And what's been the response that you've had to it?
Very, very good responses. One thing that I really like to do when I'm able to attend a screening is, after the screening, serve a whole lot of dumpstered food to everyone.
Cool.
So that people get to see this thing and then immediately are confronted with the actual opportunity to kind of partake in that and make it a reality, not just this weird thing that happened on a screen that's distant from them.
Right.
Excellent. And you will be in Nevada City on Saturday. You planning to do that in as part of your presentation?
Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it out.
Okay. You were an advertised feature performer, but we'll scratch that for the moment. The film, I know, is being shown at 2:52 p.m. on Saturday afternoon in Nevada City. Maybe people can go out and dumpster dive afterward.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully. I've heard from quite a few other people who have just bought the film. It's available online at Amazon and also at IndieFlix.com.
Oh, okay. Good. IndieFlix.com.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And Amazon.
Yes.
Okay, and again, the name of the film is I Love Trash, and the filmmaker is David Brown. And you made it with someone else?
The other filmmaker's name is Greg Mann.
Okay, Greg Mann. We should give him credit as well. And what do you hope to be the effect of this film? I mean, it's nice to know that it's selling and it's being seen and screened. And do you hope to have some impact with your film?
Yeah. In our film, we decided not to buy anything. We completely boycotted the act of buying for those 3 months, but we're not telling everyone they need to stop buying everything, just that any aspect of the life that they want to withdraw from buying, they can, and it's something you can engage in a little level or a really large level. You can, I mean, even just reusing a piece of paper,
right.
Anything you can, right. You can find, you can reuse anything around you.
And do you have any ideas for new films? Are you becoming a filmmaker as a result of this experience and this success?
I was hoping to do what I'm sort of envisioning as kind of a sequel called The Isle of Trash.
Oh.
In I Love Trash, we rented an apartment.
Uh-huh.
And we just filled everything with stuff, but we didn't create the space we were living in.
I see.
So, what I would like to do for a sequel is build an actual island out of trash.
Oh my goodness!
Structure and a home on that island, out of floating out of plastic bottles and as a floating base.
Uh-huh.
And a structure to a whole home to live in.
Wow, that sounds like a really ambitious project.
It is, but I think it's doable.
And do you have a venue for this, where for building your island and your home?
I haven't figured out a location for this yet.
Uh-huh.
So I'm keeping my eyes out for a spot of water that I'll be allowed to build an island on, an artistic, beautiful one, I hope.
Right. Well, good luck with that. It sounds really interesting to me, and we hope that we'll see the film that is the sequel to the one that is being shown in Nevada City this weekend at the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. We've been talking with David Brown, filmmaker of I Love Trash. David, thank you so much. It's very interesting to talk with you.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, every now and then, I think you might like to get something from us. Nice. Easy.
there's just one thing. You see, we never, ever do nothing. Nice. Easy. We always do it. I'm going to take the beginning of this song and do it. But then we're going to do the finish.
Proud Mary, which is all about rolling on the river by Tina Turner. And we're on the phone now with Annabella Funk, who has rolled some footage on the Yuba River. She'll be premiering her film Journey of the Yuba Saturday and Sunday at the Wild and Scenic Film Festival. Hi, Annabella.
Hello, this is Susan, and it's lovely to have you on the show. We want you to know that, now, Annabella, are you still in third grade?
No, I'm in fourth.
You're in fourth grade, and you're now nine, not eight, then.
No, I'm 10, because I just turned 10.
You just had a birthday. Mm-hmm. And you are, we've heard, the recipient of the Wild and Scenic Film Festival Student Film Award.
Yeah, I did.
That's great. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And where do you go to school?
I go to school at Deer Creek Elementary in Nevada City.
In Nevada City, okay. And what got you started thinking about making a film and this particular one?
Well, what got me started was in my class, they asked me what we had to do a class project, and mm-hmm. I chose to do it on the river. And I chose to do it on the river because I like swimming in the river, and I want to bring the salmon back.
Okay. And then you decided, how did you decide that film would be the way you would go, say, rather than writing a research paper or Googling it on the web, something like that?
Because filming is a way to get the message out to people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are at the film festival, and a lot of people see films and movies, and that's a way to get them out to people.
You bet.
So had you been to the film festival in the past before you made your film?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Well, I've been there, but I haven't been in it.
Right. This is your first film that's been in the film festival, but you've seen films at the film festival before?
Yes.
Okay, and so that is part of what inspired you?
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us a little bit about your film.
My film is about, it's called The Journey of the Yuba, and it's about how I interview people about the river and what they know about the river, and how it shows pictures of the salmon trying to return to the upper part of the river, and shows salmon unsuccessful, and it's, yeah.
So how did you have to prepare to do some of the things that you did? You had to film, you had to ask questions. How did you prepare yourself to do all of this work?
I prepared myself for doing it by researching a lot of pictures and on the internet, and I got my mom, while I was interviewing people, I got my mom to film for me, and...
And you actually went to the river and took pictures of the fish as part of the project?
Well, in one scene of my film, there's a picture of, at the very end, there's just a picture of a film of the steady river. Now, I was actually filming that.
Okay.
So that's the part that I see every day.
Did you have to do a lot of research?
Yes, I did.
And what things did you look into?
I looked into, like, what went on in California and, like, the mines. And I looked into how the river used to be, how they panned for gold in the river, hydraulic mining.
My goodness. Covered a lot of different topics.
Yeah.
How has doing this research affected your thinking or your opinions about the river?
Well, it affected my thinking because I thought a lot more about how I could make a difference about it.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought more about how hydraulic mining had damaged the mountain sides.
Right.
Of the river.
You were mentioning swimming in the Yuba. The parts of it I've seen often don't look deep enough to swim anymore because in many cases it's spread out, been damaged over time, gravel mining quarries as well as mining.
Well, I live on a part of the Yuba and it's deep enough to swim and there's fish.
Okay.
And it's the upper part of the Yuba.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you talk a little bit about the editing of the film and how you put it together? Did you do this on your home computer?
No. Well, yeah, I researched the stuff on my home computer,
mm-hmm.
but I filmed it on my mom's video camera.
Okay, so you went right into the video camera. Did you have to rearrange any parts afterward, or did you pretty much get it in the camera as you wanted it?
Well, we had to, like, one time I had to refilm something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had to rearrange a lot of stuff.
Okay.
So did you learn a lot doing this project?
Yes, I did.
What's the most important thing you learned?
I learned that we need to bring the salmon back because there's two dams preventing them to return to a part of the Yuba so that they don't get extinct,
mm-hmm.
because the salmon numbers are dropping like
yes.
crazy.
Yes, 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 so. Everywhere. Yeah. So what's your weekend like? Tell us what you are going to be doing at the festival and what are you going? Will you receive your award there? Tell us what your weekend looks like.
Well, I'm going to make a short speech all of the days. And
wow.
I'm going to run around and give out little certificates and stuff for people to look at and, like, sell things for the circle.
And when is your film being shown?
My film is being shown on Saturday morning, Friday evening, and on Sunday.
Okay.
And how? I just have one more question. I have lots of questions, but we're running out of time. How do you think this will affect maybe your future? Do you think, have you become interested in maybe being an environmentalist or maybe a filmmaker? Do you think this experience is going to have long-term impact?
Yes, I actually do. I think that I might be a filmmaker when I grow up.
That sounds great.
Okay, great.
Excellent. We have been speaking with Annabella Funk. Her film won the Youth Student Film Award at the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, and she will be there during the weekend handing out things and showing her film and giving a speech. So those of you who are going to the film festival, make sure you meet Annabella. Annabella, thank you so much. It was delightful to talk to you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Have a great weekend.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Cool, Cool River by Paul Simon in honor of our incredibly articulate 10-year-old guest, Annabella Funk, and her film, The Journey of the Yuba. We want to remind you that tonight at 7 o'clock on KZFR Radio, listen to Adrian Scott and The Storyteller. Are you ready for a trip around the world? Tune into The Storyteller and journey to places near and far. Hear stories, legends, music, and customs from around the world. Explore traditions from long ago and modern-day cultures with your anthropological guide, Adrian Scott. And then at 7:30 p.m. tonight, it's All Mixed Up with Mark, Mike, Jeff, and Jane, bringing you 2.5 hours of rock and pop from the edges of mainstream and contemporary music. They will blur the boundaries of most commercial radio. A good time is guaranteed, so join them for All Mixed Up.
And we want to remind you that you're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. And the program is Ecotopia, and it's made possible by listener contributions and by Greenovations. Based in Chico, Greenovations specializes in energy-focused retrofitting and green building upgrades. They offer in-home energy audits, diagnostic testing, environmentally friendly products for home improvements. Greenovations can be reached by calling 895-9700 and on the web at green-o-vations.com. And Ecotopia is also brought to you by Serenity Homes, specializing in Fuqua manufactured homes, built using sustainable building practices with over 70 floor plans to choose from. The Serenity Homes in-house construction staff will assist you with all of your on-site development needs, from permits to the final inspection. For more information, you can visit them on the web at www.serenityhomes.com or at their showroom, located at 2490 Bruce Road. Serenity Homes can be reached by calling 566-9480.
We also want to tell you about a wonderful opportunity to learn about organic garden over the next 11 Sundays here in Chico. Have you always wanted to grow your own organic garden but didn't know where to start? Do you already have a garden but want tips from experienced local organic farmers and gardeners? Would you like to garden but don't have a suitable site? Or do you have a good site that you want to share with an eager gardener? If so, this is the class for you. It's organized by David Grau. There will be 11 sessions, be held most of them at the Chico Grange from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. The total fee is an astronomically low $36 for all 11 sessions. If you have questions, you can email David Grau. He's at david@valleyoaktool.com. That's valleyoaktool.com. Or you can call Lee Karlovic at 342-6188. Tonight, after listening to this program about the Wild and Scenic Film Festival, you may well have an overwhelming urge to make a film yourself. Fortunately, with digital cameras and home computers, we can all become filmmakers if we'd like. There are plenty of places to show your film, such as YouTube. We have found a particularly good source of information. It's called The Complete Egits Guide to Filmmaking. Egits spelled E-E-J-I-T. It's at www.exposure.co.uk, and we'll post that on our website as well. The Egits Guide to Filmmaking has a series of very detailed lessons on such topics as how to get your movie online, a filmmaker's dictionary, pre-production ideas for movies, script layout. They have a unit called Sharks and Structure, creating dramatic structure for your movies, where they analyze Jaws and suggest that you can get similar drama in your own films. They'll teach you about storyboarding your movie. There's a rough guide to camera formats and acquisition of video equipment. Blood and bullets for no-budget movies, lighting on a low budget, and some advice on non-linear computer editing. So check out the Idiot's Guide to Filmmaking. Make some films, and next year you can be in the Wild and Scenic Film Festival.
And we also want to tell you about Green Planet Films. Green Planet Films is a nonprofit distributor of nature and environmental films from around the globe. They promote environmental education through film and have a belief in the power of film to be an instrumental catalyst to awareness, education, and change. They are a nonprofit, and they've been growing in their selection of DVDs and promoting them to people who wish to educate themselves or others on important environmental topics of our time. They have flexibility with their pay-per-rental DVD service. You can rent many nature and environmental films for $7.99 and keep them for 15 days. And they also have a rent-to-own program, and they have things on coal, the effects of coal on Chevron and Ecuador. There are a number of prominent and important environmental topics that are covered in their films, and you can find them at greenplanetfilms.org.
Thank you very much for listening to Ecotopia. You can contact us at ecotopia@kzfr.org. That's our email address. Or visit our website where we post the resources for most of our programs. That's ecotopiakzfr.net. I'm Stephen Chudy.
And I'm Susan Chudy. Thank you for joining us.
We believe in the sunshine.